Now, the next subheading in this chapter is the plot of tragedy, its structure, constituent elements, kinds of plots, peripecia, anagnorisis. And the first one is the plot, its nature and significance. Aristotle devotes considerable attention to an examination of the nature, structure, and constituent elements of the ideal tragic plot. Tragedy is the representation of action, and action consists of incidents and events. Plot is the arrangement of these incidents and events. Plot thus contains the kernel of the action, which it is the business of tragedy to represent. Hence, the primary importance of plot and the extended treatment which it receives at the hands of Greek philosopher. Plot, he says, is the first principle, the soul of tragedy, and that there can be no tragedy without a plot. He lists 6 formative elements of tragedy: plot, character, thought, melody, diction, spectacle, and of these 6, he assigns the first place to plot. More space has been devoted to a discussion of nature, structure, kinds, and the constituent elements of an ideal plot than to any other of the 6 formative elements of tragedy. The next subheading in this chapter is plot distinguished from story. The Greek word for poet means a maker, and poet is a maker, not because he makes verses, but because he makes plots. The poet need not make his story. Indeed, it would be better if he chooses a traditional story and then proceeds to make out of it his own plot. Stories taken from history, mythology, or legend are to be preferred, for they are familiar and easy to understand, and they serve as guidelines for characterization. Having chosen his story, or having invented it, the artist must subject it to a process of artistic selection and ordering. Only relevant incidents and situations are to be selected, and they are to be so arranged that they seem to follow each other necessarily and inevitably. Moreover, the incidents chosen must be serious, that is to say, weighty, of some importance and not trivial, as tragedy is an imitation of a serious action. Therefore, the incidents should be serious, such as are likely to arouse the tragic emotions of pity and fear. The next subheading in this chapter is the plot, its wholeness. Next, Aristotle lays down that the tragic plot must be a complete whole. By complete, he means that the plot must have a beginning, a middle, and an end. It must have a beginning, that is, it must not necessarily flow out of some previous situation. There might be earlier parts of the story, the antecedents, and they may be communicated by the dramatist in due course. But the beginning must be clear and intelligible even without them. It must not provoke us to ask why and how. The common Greek practice was to give the antecedents through the prologue, a soliloquy, soliloquy, spoken by some character who doesn't appear again in the play. A Greek tragedy, says Humphrey House, started much later than a Shakespearean one, so that there may be greater unity and concentration. The antecedents were related in due course. An effective beginning is the sure test of a dramatist's skill. O.B. Hardison discusses the question of an effective beginning in detail and concludes that the beginning of a plot is the incident which initiates a process of change, and this process concludes with the end of the tragedy. This view harmonizes with Aristotle's statement that tragedy depicts a change from happiness to misery. The beginning or the initiating incident begins this process of change, and the process thus initiated reaches its culmination at the end. After the beginning comes the middle. A middle is something that is consequent upon a situation that has gone before and which is followed by a catastrophe. The middle is everything between the first incident and the last. The middle is followed by the end. The end is that which is consequent upon a given situation, but which is not followed by any further incident or situation. The middle must follow naturally and inevitably upon the beginning and must logically lead to the end or the catastrophe. The artistic wholeness implies logical link-up of the various incidents, events, and situations that form the plot. The other subheading is its magnitude. Aristotle then comes to the question of magnitude. The plot must have a certain magnitude. It must have a certain length. Magnitude here means size. It should be neither too small nor too large. It should be long enough to allow the process of change from happiness to misery initiated by the beginning to be properly and completely developed, but not too long for memory to encounter it as a whole. If it is too long, the beginning would be forgotten before the end. If it is too small, its different parts will not be clearly distinguishable from each other, as in the case of a living organism. Within these limits, the plot should be as large as possible. Larger the better. In this connection, O.B. Hardison writes, "The precise rule is that the magnitude should be whatever is required for a change to occur from bad fortune to good, or from good fortune to bad, through a series of incidents that are in accordance with probability or necessity. In other words, it is the action itself, not the audience or the judges, that should determine the magnitude or size of the plot. Each drama is a unique problem in poetic craftsmanship, and what is valid for one may be invalid for another. Magnitude also implies order and proportion. And as in the case of a living organism, beauty and the order depend upon magnitude. The different parts must be properly related to each other and to the whole. Thus, magnitude implies that the plot must have order, logic, symmetry, and perspicuity. PERSPICUITY. Now, the next subheading in this chapter is organic unity. Episodic plots. Aristotle conceives of the plot of a tragedy as an organic whole, and also as having organic unity in its action. An action is a process of change from happiness to misery or vice versa, and tragedy must depict from only one such action. There may be a number of incidents and events, but together they must constitute one and only one action. The incidents impart variety, and unity results from the fact that the incidents are so arranged that they all tend to the same end or catastrophe. The plot must also have the organic unity, that is, the unity which a living creature has. The unity which he prescribes is not a mere mechanical, formal unity of parts, an outward symmetry of form, but an inward principle capable of admitting the complexity of living things, while possessing also the vital relation of their parts. Atkins, that is, this is the statement of Atkins. Thus, the plot may have a variety, but still be a unity. This unity arises from the fact that, first, every event, every incident has a logical connection with the rest of the action, and secondly, none of them is irrelevant, that is, such that its presence or absence will make no difference to the plot. There might be episodes, indeed, episodes are necessary, for they impart variety and serve to lengthen out the plot, but then they must be properly integrated with the main action. It must not be possible to remove them or even to transpose them without causing injury to the plot. They must be necessary and they must follow each other inevitably. Just as every part of the body of a living creature is essential for its life and cannot be removed without injury to it, so every incident and episode must be necessary for the whole. Otherwise, episodic plots are the worst of all. This organic unity cannot be provided merely by the presence of the tragic hero, for many incidents may happen in the life of the hero which cannot be brought into relation with the rest. So, there should be proper sifting and ordering of the material. As O.B. Haddison points out, it is not necessary for the poet to proceed chronologically, as is necessary for a biographer. He can handle time much more freely. He may begin in the middle of the life history of the hero, instead of beginning at the very beginning of his life and continuing till the end. Probability and necessity. Further, Aristotle couples organic unity of plot with probability and necessity. The plot must deal with an action, incidents, and situations which is possible according to the laws of probability and necessity. The plot is not tied to what has actually happened, but he deals with what may probably or necessarily happen under the given circumstances. Now, probability and necessity imply that there should be no unrelated events and incidents. That is, the various events must be interrelated with a sort of artistic logic. They must follow each other inevitably, and further, that nothing should be left to chance or to marvelous, at least in the essential parts of the action. If at all, the marvelous should be used only in connection with events that happened in the remote past or for what has to be foretold. The concept of probability and necessity also implies that words and actions must be in character. They must be probable or necessary outcome of the character of a dramatic personage. Thus, probability and necessity imply coherence and order and are essential for artistic unity and wholeness. Moreover, probability implies that the tragic action must be convincing or credible. If the poet deals with something improbable, he must have the skill to make it convincing and credible. The dramatist must procure willing suspension of the disbelief for the events and incidents which form his plot. Thus, a convincing impossibility is to be preferred as a unconvincing possibility. The next subheading is the unities. The above discussion makes it clear that Aristotle rules out plurality of action. He emphasizes the unity of action but has little to say about the unity of time and the unity of place. About the unity of time, he merely says in the Poetics that tragedy should confine itself as far as possible to a single revolution of the sun. No law is implied here. Aristotle has simply made a suggestion. He has simply hinted what is desirable, and he has added the saving clause as far as possible. As regards to the so-called unity of place, Aristotle only mentioned once, when comparing the epic and the tragedy, that epic can narrate a number of actions going on simultaneously in different parts, while in drama, simultaneous actions cannot be represented, for the stage is one part and not several parts or places. In this respect also, Aristotle was much misunderstood by Renaissance critics and later French critics, who deduced from what Aristotle had said the rigid unity of place. The next subheading in this chapter is fatal versus fortunate plots. Aristotle says that tragedy is an imitation of a serious action, and that its purpose is to arouse pity and fear. Now, serious means important, weighty, weighty. The plot of a tragedy must be comprised of serious incidents, because for Aristotle, tragedy is essentially a play which deals with great moral issues, matters of utmost importance to human life. Moreover, the incidents comprising the plot should be such as are likely to arouse the feelings of pity and fear. Now, this means that tragedy is a tale of suffering with an unhappy ending, because it is only such a tale that is likely to arouse both pity and fear. This means, in other words, that the plot or a tragedy must be a fatal one. Aristotle rules out fortunate plots for tragedy, because such a plot is not likely to arouse the proper tragic emotions. A tragic plot must depict the hero passing from happiness to misery, and not rising from misery to happiness. The suffering or misery of the hero may be caused either by the action of an enemy or by the action of a stranger, but it would be most piteous, piteous, when it is unintentionally caused by friends and relatives who are his well-wishers. It is then that we get the ideal tragic plot, the plot which is likely to arouse pity and fear the most of all. The next subheading in this chapter is the plot, its three kinds. According to Aristotle, tragic plots may be of three kinds: A. Simple, B. Complex, and C. Plots based on or depicting incidents of suffering and depending for their effect on such depiction. The words simple and complex here have technical terms. A simple plot is one which does not have any peripety and anagnorisis, but the action moves forward uniformly without any violent or sudden change. Aristotle prefers complex plots. An ideal tragic plot, according to Aristotle, must not be simple. It must be complex, that is, it must have peripeteia, peripeteia, that is, reversal of intention, and anagnorisis, that is, recognition of truth. It is unexpected catastrophe resulting from a deed one with the best of intentions that arouses pity and fear to the greatest possible extent. The ideal tragedy is one which results from human error, error on the part of friends and relatives, error on the part of the hero himself. The ideal tragedy is a story in which the calamity is due to a false move blindly made by a friend or kinsman or by the hero himself. It is a tragedy brought about not by the deliberate purpose of some evil agent, nor yet by mere chance, but by human error. It is the statement of Atkins. F. L. Lucas agrees with Atkins and says, "There is nothing more brilliant in the Poetics than this recognition by Aristotle of the tragedy of error of the peripeteia as the deepest of all." Peripeteia implies a recognition by Aristotle of the irony of circumstances or life, while peripeteia implies ignorance of truth. Agnorisis is the realization of truth forced upon the hero by some marks or signs or by chance, or better still, by the logic events. An ideal plot is one which agnorisis follows or even coincides with peripeteia, that is, with the false step taken by the hero or his well-wishers. In the Aristotle's conception, hamartia, hamartia, peripeteia, and agnorisis all hang together in the ideal schematization of the tragic plot, schematization. This was the statement of Humphrey House. Hamartia is the tragic error and is related to the character of the hero, but in a successful plot it is so closely worked into the plot as to be inseparable from it. The miscalculation of the hero causes a chain of incidents which result in the change from good fortune to bad, which the tragic plot depicts. Both peripeteia and agnorisis are incidents and so parts of the plot. The peripeteia is the fatal working of the plot to a result and opposite of that intended. The anagnorisis is the recognition of truth. It is the change from ignorance to knowledge, brought about as far as possible by the incidents of the plot. It must be necessary and probable. Result of the incidents that have preceded it. It results in a change from friendship to hostility and vice versa. After the recognition, the plot must veer from VWER. After the recognition, the plot must veer off in a new direction. Recognition in the sense is closely akin to reversal. Recognition and reversal can be caused by separate incidents. Often, however, it is difficult to separate the two. They may be easily combined in the same incident, and Aristotle considers this combined form to be the most effective. Aristotle himself cites King Oedipus as the best example of this combined reversal recognition, or compound recognition, as it is called. Complex plots, that is, plots with reversals and recognitions, are the best, for recognition and reversal add the element of surprise, and pitiable and fearful incidents are made more so by the shock of surprise. The action has been moving forward, and then quite suddenly the unexpected happens. There is sudden change of direction. This generates surprise, and the inherent pity and fear of the incidents are enhanced. As regards the third kind of plot, the plot depending for its effect on incidents of suffering, Aristotle rates it very low. It is the plot which derives its effects from the depiction of torture, murder, maiming, violence, death, etc., and says, Aristotle, tragic effect must be created naturally and not with the artificial and theatrical aids. Such plots indicate a deficiency in the art of the poet. And the next subheading in this chapter is the denouement, denouement, denouement. In making their plots, the poets should take great care to make their denouements or resolutions effective and successful. Unraveling of the plot should be done naturally and logically, and not by the use of arbitrary devices like chance, supernatural intervention, etc. God should intervene only where it becomes necessary to explain the past or announce future events external to the action. It is the statement of Atkins. Aristotle doesn't consider poetic justice as necessary for tragedy. He regards it more in keeping with the spirit of comedy. Poetic justice implies that rewards and punishments are meted out according to the deserts of the dramatic personages, while the essence of tragedy is that suffering is far in excess of the fault or error of the hero. Similarly, Aristotle rules out plots with a double end, that is, plots in which there is happiness for some of the characters and misery for others. Such a double ending weakens the tragic effect and hence must be avoided. It is more proper to comedy. Thus, Aristotle is against tragi-comedy. In this way, we come to the end of this major subheading, that is, the plot of tragedy, its structure, constituent elements, kinds of plots, peripatia, and anagnorisis. Thanks.